Without further introductions, let me introduce a director and officer of the Senior Statesman, Pepe Linden, who's going to introduce our speakers and the program. Pepe.
Thank you so much for coming. We've received a text that the secretary is running a little bit late. We're going to start without her, with Mr. Lynch. So I appreciate your coming out in the cold. I appreciate your willingness to miss the public hearings, because I know it's going to be a fascinating program. And among the people we have here is, who's not going to be on the panel, but we all should know, is Lou Hatter, who's the communications manager for VDOT. Lou, would you just stand up so people can... And I bet I'm not the only one that for years thought that Lou was of a different gender, but now that I've had the opportunity to meet him, I know that that's not true. John Lynch has been the Culpeper District Manager with VDOT since June of 2013. His area includes 9 counties from Fauquier through Albemarle County, including Charlottesville. Among his recent and very ambitious projects is the Route 29 Solutions Program. Before coming to Culpeper, he was a regional transportation program director in Northern Virginia. So he has a lot of different perspectives about when we say we have a lot of traffic. I always find it interesting to find out what degrees people have, because I doubt either Engineer Lynch or Secretary Ballantyne, when they were graduating high school and deciding what degree to pursue, thought that these were going to be the jobs that they were going to end up with, that these were what they had on their mind. So John has a bachelor's degree in civil engineering from the University of Delaware and a master of science in civil engineering from George Mason University. We're delighted to have you here.
Thanks very much, Pepe. It's great to be here with you all. I want to thank you for this opportunity to present the Culpeper District and transportation in and around our region. You know, we look forward to continue to work with the community to make sure we make Virginia's transportation system the best in the nation. In the Culpeper District, we start every meeting with a safety message, and I'd like you to do that now. In the Culpeper District, we have, a very unfortunate statistic that we're realizing. You know, nationally and even statewide, we're seeing our fatalities going down, fortunately. But in the Culpeper District, that trend is a little bit is opposite. We're actually currently we have 58 fatalities in our district. For the first 9 months of the year, with 3 months to go. Last year, the total, we had 63. So, you know, we could delve into the reasons why, but one of the remarkable statistics in all that is half of those fatalities are unbelted drivers. And when you think about, you know, if everybody just, you know, clicked it and moved it forward, we could cut those fatalities in half without doing anything else. You know, that, and that trend is not unique to the Culpeper District. It applies statewide as well as nationally. You know, they say that 10% of or 90% of us do use our seatbelt. 10% don't, but the 10% that don't are 50% of the fatalities. So again, it's just jarring what a simple thing can do to save your life. So talking about the Culpeper District, as Pepe indicated, we're nine counties divided into 3 different residency offices. The Charlottesville residency, which covers Greene, Madison, and Albemarle County, as well as the city of Charlottesville. The Louisa residency, which has Orange, Louisa, Fluvanna. And then the Warrenton residency is Rappahannock, Fauquier, and Culpeper District. And, the overall district is responsible for maintaining and operating about 10,500 lane miles of roadway. So that's all the interstate, the primary and secondary roadways. And just put that in perspective, that's equivalent to constructing a 4-lane highway between here and San Diego, California. So it's a lot we have to take care of. So looking at the Charlottesville residency, they're serviced by Joel D'Annunzio, who couldn't be here with us today. But it, as I said, it covers, in addition to Albemarle and the city of Charlottesville, for Charlottesville's oversight, obviously, as a city, we just primarily provide them some funding and oversight for federal funds that require a lot of strings attached when you agree to use those. But he's got, you know, six different areas. There's actually four in Albemarle County, and then one in Greene and one in Madison. And their total, you know, he can get a two-lane road between here and San Diego with the lane miles that he manages. So just a quick snapshot of our construction program. Currently, we have six active construction projects. Up north in Fauquier County, we have the Warrenton Interchange, which is a design build, and if those are familiar with that area, the Lord Fairfax Community College that has that, the signal, that'll be taken out and put in interchange. We also have eight projects here in Albemarle County that we'll talk a little bit about in a minute. Those are bundled as a design build, and that was awarded a couple months ago, so that'll the design's underway, and construction should get started next construction season. And then obviously we're winding down on a lot of our paving schedule work, as well as our bridge maintenance and replacement projects. So, you know, we have at VDOT, we have an acronym for everything. So SMART Scale sounds like it's something that is pretty self-explanatory. It's a SMART Scale to fund transportation projects, but the SMART stands for Systems for the Management and Allocation of Resources for Transportation. So and then SCALE is for how we measure those performance measures. So it's for safety, congestion, accessibility, land use, and the environment. And that program really is about investing the limited tax dollars that we have in terms of the right critical transportation projects. You know, we've completed three rounds of SMART Scale, and some of the projects that we mentioned are part of the funding scheme for that, including the six projects in Albemarle County. Four of those projects are complete. We completed the 1553 roundabout in Fluvanna County, the 29607 in Louisa, or in Greene, I'm sorry, and the Warrenton Park and Ride and Brandy Station Park and Ride in one in Fauquier and one in Culpeper County. But looking at the number of applications and then the number of projects funded, you can see you know, that obviously not everything that's submitted gets funded. When you look from a statewide standpoint, the first round, there's 321 projects that were submitted, and with $7.2 billion in requests, with a available funding stream of $1.4 billion. So it's something that, you know, obviously maybe some of those projects shouldn't have been funded because they may not have been good projects, but it really does illustrate that there's a lot of needs out there. And the subsequent rounds had similar numbers, you know, between about $1 billion in allocations and $7 to $9 billion that was requested. So it really is something that is a critical need that we need to continue to work on here in not only the Culpeper District, but also throughout the Commonwealth. Froze up, Jim. But we'll continue from a district performance standpoint. You know, we do track our project performance measures for VDOT and our locally managed projects. We're currently meeting or exceeding the on-time, on-budget measures for our projects. And, you know, our goal here in the Culpeper District, obviously, is to exceed those measures but at least to meet those. And so we still have a little bit of work to go to make sure we're a high-performing district. You might have to stand up there and... you know, some of the recent past that we've had in terms of work in Albemarle County and Charlottesville's the 29 solutions projects. That was a $254 million program that was completed in 2017 that included the widening of 29 on the north side, the Berkmar Bridge, as well as the Rio Road intersection. And those improvements, both from a safety as well as a travel time standpoint, helped improve mobility throughout the corridor. You saw anywhere from a 43% to 54% reduction in injury crashes. And again, a lot of that is at the Rio Road intersection. Anytime you can get rid of a signal to avoid some of those cross-conflicting movements, you help with safety. And then the corridor travel times are improved from 15% to 31%, depending on which travel. And that sounds like a lot from a percentage standpoint. I think the overall was about 8 minutes total in that whole corridor from Hydraulic up to Airport Road. But when you think about, you know, 25,000 vehicles a day, that's a lot of time that's saved for the traveling public. Yep. And then we talked about the Albemarle County design build bundle. So that project was awarded to Curtis Construction a couple months ago at the CTB meeting. It's a total contract value of $25.5 million. And it involves, you know, the I-64 interchange at exit 118. That's just a modification of the turn lane. We're removing one loop ramp and putting in a left turn lane and extending that to avoid that conflict up on 64 with the back-to-back loop ramps. And then I-64 at exit 124, which up in the Pantops area, diverging diamond interchange will be constructed there to help with the congestion through that area. And then Fontaine Avenue ramp improvements. And then there's the two roundabouts at 250, 151, and then at 220 and 649 or Profit Road, and Rio Mills Road, Berkmore Drive connector. So that will connect Rio Mills Road over to the new Berkmore Drive and eliminate the connection can be cut off there at Rio Mills to just provide access down to the river in and out. So those projects were bundled to get efficiencies in terms of bundling that contract. So, you know, there's some common aspects for those projects, the roundabout, so that the contractor can build efficiencies into the bid and try to get a little bit bigger bang for the buck. The other, you know, when you talk about some of the future happenings around here, we spent a couple of years prior after the Rio and 29 Solutions projects to figure out our next biggest challenge, which is at Hydraulic Road and 29. And we did the county and the city in cooperation did a small area plan that included the transportation aspect of that. And so the purpose was to try to address that congestion, you know, with a grade separation interchange at Hydraulic and 29. And actually, the configuration would be the opposite of what we did at Rio, where the movements would be put down underneath and the through traffic would be up on top. And that also included two roundabouts, one at Hillsdale and District Avenue, and then a grade separation at Angus, and then up on the north at Zan with those that'll help in that congestion area when it is all built out. And that's done in conjunction with the county and the city's land use plan for that area. So it's a long-term look at what may happen in that area. They did put the entire package in for funding in the last round of Smart Scale, but it was not successful, and we're looking at how to maybe repackage that with the county and the city to see if we can be more successful on the next round. So keep your fingers crossed, and we'll see if we can't do another successful project here in Albemarle County, Charlottesville area. And then we do have, you know, we're winding down our the district paving schedule work is ongoing. So we've got about 8 miles of Interstate 64 paving that we've completed, and about 30 miles on the primary and 55, and all but one contract of that is done. So those pesky lane closures and flagging operations that hold you up in the summertime are pretty much winding down. So we'll be free to go. For some structure and bridge projects under construction, Dickinson Road over the North Fork Ravanna River, and that's replacing a metal truss that has a 3-ton limit with a new bridge that'll accommodate all legal loads, so there won't be any restrictions on that. And this summer or spring summer, the city will advertise the Belmont Bridge reconstruction, so they'll replace that bridge in downtown. That'll begin about a $26 million project. And then we have 13 other bridge replacement projects for about $25 million that'll be pursuing throughout the year. You know, sometimes we get unfortunate weather that causes damage to our infrastructure. Last year's flooding, we had damage across Virginia. Ours happened earlier than some of the other tropical storms, but this was in May 30th, actually 2018. And this project, Haneytown Road, is in Greene County. So that bridge was washed out, and it was recently reopened less than a month after the storm through Greene County under an emergency repair contract. Once we got that going, but you know, sometimes Mother Nature takes care of things for us. There are other times that we get to be kids again and have some fun with blowing things up. So this was in Fauquier County on 29 at Vinton Hill Road, where we had a sight distance issue coming up to a signal. So there's actually a dip in the road and came up to the signal. A lot of rear end accidents. It was the number one number of accidents in our district. So we had actually a lot. Things have been trying to be done there for a long time, and I finally said, you know, the only way, and I'll be quite honest, I was half joking, the only way we can get that thing built is if we close down 29, and somebody took me seriously, and we proceeded on that view and with our fingers crossed. So we allowed the contractor to shut that down for 3 weeks during the summer when traffic volumes are somewhat lower, and you know, we found out as we were doing the development why it took, you know, nobody had done this before, because it's all rock under there. So we got to blow things up, and this is a little video that shows that. And then that's one day, and then the next day they came back and did the rest of it. So that's how you cut those hills down in quick order. We're fortunate to have you know, Chemung Contracting out of Mitchells, Virginia, who run the Cedar Mountain Quarry. So they knew how to, they do that kind of stuff every day, and were able to do that efficiently and effectively. But that video really went viral. We saw it on 139 media outlets, including the Ukraine. Now, there is some controversy about how the Ukraine got a hold of it, but let's not go there. And then about 10,000, the almost 11,000 Twitter users, the Facebook page, 200 and some thousand. And it was on ABC News as well as some other views that we've estimated to be over a million views. So we're happy to see that our success of blowing things up was shared by all. And I think there's just one more slide. But that's even better. You can hide behind that. But no, that was just the, you know, the final picture was just when they were doing the final paving there as an aerial shot. And they had the 3 weeks to rebuild it. So they're coming in, the northbound is on the left side. And they finished on Friday, August 2nd. They had till midnight to get that work complete. They finished at 11:47 p.m., so they were 13 minutes early. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Pepe.
Is there a secretary in the house?
Yes. She's back here.
Thank you very much.
I just sat down at the back.
Okay.
So when you said that, I'm like, oh, are y'all somebody taking minutes?
And that's my job, too. So Shannon Valentine was appointed Secretary of Transportation in January of 2018. She is uniquely qualified to hold this position since she was a former member of the House of Delegates, having served on the House Transportation Committee, and the epitome of someone who led a number of bipartisan efforts related to transparent government, clean energy production, and intercity passenger rail service. Now, referring to what are the college degrees of people in these positions that they probably never envisioned they were going to have, Shannon's a Phi Beta Kappa graduate of the University of Virginia with a degree in economics. She completed a four-year course in education for ministry from Swanee University. She's a graduate of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership and a founding member of One Virginia 2021, Virginians for Fair Redistricting. On a personal note, may I add that the Secretary Valentine is one of the most intelligent, dynamic, principled, and articulate people I have ever known. We welcome you here.
Can you all hear me if I just... No, we're doing a podcast.
Where is it? Well, hello. I'm just going to introduce myself and then I'll sit down. What a great job. I actually was out of town when Vent Hill was leveled, and I saw it on national news. I will say it looked like the Lockheed Monster when I saw it live during that time. So anyway, it was a really good overview. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it. It's wonderful to be with all of you. It was tough getting out of Richmond, as it always is, but I'm kind of going through Charlottesville to Culpeper. We have a public hearing, and then I'm on to D.C. for some meetings tonight. I'm actually joined by the Assistant Secretary of Transportation, Amy White, in the back. I just want you to know that I get very excited. Well, hello. How are you? I get very excited about transportation. We in Virginia have an unparalleled transportation system. We have the Port of Virginia. We have a spaceport, which launches rockets to the International Space Station with resupply and research missions. We've actually just launched our first commercial company to come to Wallops Island on the Eastern Shore. A company called Rocket Lab has moved flight operations to Wallops Island, and so they'll be launching once a month, doing a lot of commercial and research and government work. So it's a fascinating part of industry and kind of the future of transportation. We have 66 airports, including Dulles and Reagan. We have roads and bridges and tunnels and rail and transit and metro, bike paths, sidewalks, ferries, barges. Amy, did I leave something out? We really have a true multimodal system in Virginia. And as we're moving forward, we're really trying to create a platform that is more seamless, more connected, because we really are the foundation for our economy. Coming into this position, we have really built on a lot of the decisions that had been made in previous administrations on accountability and identifying the smartest projects we can through programs like Smart Scale and a commitment to State of Good Repair, and we've reformed our public-private partnership office. coming into this with Governor Northam, we've really been focused on three pillars, one being execution. In June of this year, we passed a $22.9 billion six-year improvement plan, 3,800 projects. Delivering those projects with excellence is going to be a huge part of our legacy. So we're very focused on time and on budget, and I actually prefer ahead of schedule and under budget. But we're really working to deliver that. And that's what you all expect so much from those of us who serve in transportation. Secondly, on innovation, very early when I got this job, I was able to open an office of research and innovation that crossed all those modes of transportation. A woman named Kathy McGee, who continues to oversee a research council for the Virginia Department of Transportation here in Charlottesville, heads that particular office. Her focus is on fiber, cybersecurity, data, autonomous systems, and automated systems. And so she's looking at this from an integrated multimodal platform, really for two reasons. How can we think more creatively about solving transportation problems? And two, making sure that commerce around the world knows that Virginia is open for business. With research and pilots and business development, how do we serve in supporting those efforts with job creation, workforce, and business investment? And then finally, by more deliberately tying transportation decisions to economic development and economic competitiveness. We are trying to do that all over Virginia in our urban centers and our rural centers, but really making sure that as we make decisions, we are indeed supporting the economic future and growth in Virginia. So that's kind of how we operate and cross from a broad perspective. And so now I'll take a seat, and then we can maybe do Q&A. And okay, thank you.
So once again, we'll have people with microphones at either side, and we hope you use the microphone before you pose your question, since this will be going into a podcast accessible through our website. But I get to ask the first question.
Wow.
All right, take my prerogative. So can both of you comment on something that's happened in the last 5 years, very innovative at VDOT, that we may not know about?
Well, usually, you know, everything that we do in the districts is very transparent, and you all know about it because you see it pretty much every day. You know, when you look at the 29 Solutions Project, I think the one thing that a lot of folks were surprised about with that project was, you know, the contractor was working at night driving piles into the pavement and then covering up during the day so the traveling public could to drive on them. And that was a key component of when they closed the intersection and started their excavation. You know, I think that was something that was innovative from a constructability standpoint, just to make sure we kept the traveling public moving, but also to make sure that when we did have that 103-day closure, which they were able to do in 57 days simply because of a lot of planning and innovation up front. I think the other, you know, the other thing that a lot of folks don't see that we're doing on the project delivery side, as we move in, on that project, we put laptops or iPads in the hands of all inspectors, as well as the construction personnel and everybody on that job, so they could readily communicate with each other. You know, if they see a deficiency on the construction, the inspector can then email that immediately to the contractor, and they can fix it. And again, on a high impact schedule type of project like that, it was imperative that those things get resolved very quickly, and to keep the project moving forward.
I think there are just many things that take place that often don't get a lot of publicity. You know, for example, in Northern Virginia, we have connected quarters, the express lanes. With those express lanes, there's a lot of technology and fiber communications along those roadways. So Virginia's been a real leader in vehicle-to-vehicle communications, vehicle-to-infrastructure communications. We own the majority of our highway system. So the consistency that we have in maintaining our roads and signs and lights allow us to be a great test bed. So there's a great deal of testing on those quarters in the evenings on autonomous vehicles, autonomous fleets, just really trying to be a leader in delivering safe new innovation systems into our network. And a lot of that takes place and nobody ever knows. And so from a technology standpoint, there are many things. But, you know, what I think sometimes matters even more are the innovative thoughts, processes, procedures that we put in place in leveraging funds and financing and putting packages together, solving problems that cross multimodals, having ships come into the port, being able to develop a reservation system for trucks so we're able to move through the port more efficiently as we look at the highway system so we can have those trucks move at the best and most effective time to try to not add to the congestion in the Hampton Roads area as we look at the rail system and build out rail. And that gets you up to the bridge crossing the Potomac River called Long Bridge, a two-track bridge that takes every CSX freight train and commuter train and rail, passenger rail train. There's a lot of logistics that take place in trying to make our system as competitive as possible.
One thing about the Solution 29 project that's left lingering for me is the computer control of the systems of the lights. It was said that that was going to be a component of the project, and everything else got reported, but there's never been a report about the computer system, how well it worked, how it works, where it's installed or not. Could you comment?
Sure. If you recall, the signal system that was in place before the 29 solutions was a proprietary system from Rhythm Engineering. It was called NSYNC, and typically it would monitor traffic each day, and then try to mimic the signal timing the next day. And hopefully things are pretty similar so that it tries to make that signal system as efficient as possible. And that system works very well until the point where you get your roadway at capacity, which we were and still are on 29. So we didn't get the efficiencies that we received. During the 29 Solutions project, the signals from hydraulic up to Airport Road, we installed fiber where we didn't have it in some of the advanced projects to get a good communication link back to our traffic operations center in Stanton. The controllers were all replaced with a new software that helped to identify any either malfunctions or inefficiencies on the signals that would then transmit it back to the TOC with, it may be alarm, it may be just something that they look at that it's not operating as intended. That the information that we provided with the savings and travel time, we did that. Initially, we did a study before the 29 Solutions projects were constructed, a travel time study, to see how long it went from hydraulic up to Airport Road. And then we did one after the Rio Road, as well as after Hillsdale was finished constructing. And those were the numbers that we talked about with I think a 43. I'd have to go back to them.
I think it's such a good question because I drive from Lynchburg through Charlottesville to D.C. quite a bit. So I would call John several times to see what is the time savings now? So what
right
is it
now, we haven't done anything.
Well, how about when we opened them?
When we opened it, it was about a 15% reduction in southbound peak time, and it was taken about 15 minutes to go from Airport Road down to Hydraulic. And so you cut that about 15% and then 31% on the northbound time. So it was a reduction of about 8 minutes or so, I think, in general. And that probably has decreased a little bit. The Bluetooth system that was in place was with the old system, and that was taken out. So we do have some INREX data we can, which is from cell phones, that you can run that to see. But if you are having any specific problems, we do want to know about. Typically, we'll get complaints, or if it's not working right, because we've gone back at Woodbrook and we reconfigured that signal to try to improve the left turn lane, because that was exceeding its capacity. But those types of things, and we can remotely fix them, observe it, and fix it on the fly. So that's something that we can take care of if we know about it. And our signal engineers over in Stanton monitor that, but they're not there, 24/7. So we'd be happy to know of any issues that you're having.
Does this work?
Yeah. Yes.
I have a question for John Lynch, and then I have a question for the secretary. John, you mentioned that the Hydraulic Road project, intersection project, didn't score high enough to get funded. Mm-hmm. But, and you said something about how you were working on improving its score. But that begs the question, who is it that does the scoring? And then for the secretary, and then I'll keep quiet. What are you thinking about the status of passenger rail service, and are you wanting to do more? Is there possibility for more? How is that going? Thank you.
So in the Smart Scale project process is on a two-year cycle to apply for funding, and our localities, as well as metropolitan planning organizations and planning districts, apply for those projects. BDOT provides some engineering support and estimating support as well. The specifically, the projects are applied for. They go through a screening process to make sure there's certain aspects that to apply. They have to meet either a VTRANS need, which is a planning document that's currently being updated to address corridors of statewide significance, as well as regional networks that we want to make sure we improve for mobility for the whole region, and then as well as safety projects. So in terms of, we talked about the SMART scale, so it was safety, congestion, accessibility, economic development, and land use. Those are the different factors that are used to score it, and they're scored by our Office of Intermodal Planning in central office in conjunction with our local districts. So they go through the application data and apply those scores. And all this is on a Smart Scale website with every round and every application. So you can go back and look and see, as well as the localities can look and see, well, where did my project score well, where it didn't. And those are the types of things where then you can make the next round of Smart Scale, you can make some adjustments, whether it's in, maybe there's some bells and whistles in your projects that really aren't needed to solve the problem, but will be nice to have. By taking those out, reducing your cost, you'll reduce your cost benefit, because it's based on the benefit of the project on all those factors, and then divided by the cost. So it's a cost benefit type of score.
So it's data driven. And we just came through the third round. And so after each round, we go back and make sure that the factors are actually capturing the the right elements, so that we are indeed identifying the right projects. So we've made tweaks over these past 4 years, three rounds. I will tell you that there were many good projects. The Hydraulic Road project is an excellent project, but there were many projects not chosen across Virginia, mainly because in the third round of Smart Scale, the amount of money in these new capacity projects was down 45%. So a huge part of what, I will get to your passenger rail, but a huge part of what we're, you know, planning for as the General Assembly session approaches is really looking at where we are in sustaining transportation funding. Much has happened, but certain factors have converged. One is vehicle miles traveled in Virginia has gone up, and the revenue from motor fuels tax has gone down. We predicted it would happen for a long time, but it actually has occurred now. In fact, we had to readjust our budget last year down about $48 million. So Smart Scale is down 45%, and of course that certainly affects how many and what projects we can actually fund. So as we go into the next session dealing with the impact of where the motor fuels tax is, when it was this most recent transportation funding was passed in 2013, it was tied to the sales price of gas. And I don't know if you remember, but within months of the legislation passing, the price of gas plummeted. And so in Virginia, we're actually artificially stable because we put a floor in it. So it can't go below a certain amount. And just the momentum for all electric vehicles, high energy efficiency of vehicles, alternative vehicles, which is great. We in transportation completely support that. But there is a reality to how that impacts funding. So we're going to be looking at how we address that. There seems to be consensus in Washington and among my colleagues across the country that in 10 to 15 years, transportation may be funded by vehicle miles traveled, some formula using that, or a miles-based user fee of some kind. But in the interim, how do we build that bridge to get there? And that's what we're focused on. As a part of that, we are also very focused on rail, freight rail, passenger rail, and commuter rail. So, you know, in Virginia, our tracks are owned by two private companies, CSX and Norfolk Southern. We are working with them. One of our key obstacles is a bridge. And when I was talking about the port earlier, that two-track bridge owned by CSX that crosses the Potomac that affects every commuter train, passenger train, and CSX freight train. Two tracks at 98% capacity. So I can't expand rail until we address the bridge. So it's a matter of addressing this bridge, finding the funding to complete what the DC DOT is actually leading an environmental study right now. It's out for public comment. We are very much involved with that. And the recommendation, the preferred alternative, is a two-track bridge only for passenger trains, so we would be separating passenger and freight for the first time. What's really important is we can't just do the bridge. We have to do the network that connects the bridge. Because, quite frankly, we could spend $2 billion on a bridge. We can spend $1 billion on infrastructure to connect it. But if we can't run the trains, it doesn't matter. And none of you will care that we did it. So there's a lot to this, and I will just tell you, it's a huge priority for us. We are completing a 95 study right now, and what we have learned is that the future of transportation, particularly along the 95 corridor, it is a multimodal approach. We are maximizing our highways. We're not building more. We're just making them work more efficiently, maximizing transit, maximizing metro. We did historic funding with that. The one mode we've not yet unlocked in Virginia is rail. So we are working very hard on trying to make that happen. That was probably a much longer answer than you wanted, but it is a huge priority, and it would transform how we actually could travel in Virginia. I'm actually heading to have a big meeting with Amtrak tomorrow.
Can I ask a question? Hello.
Yes, it's on.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, you're talking about stoplights. I live over on the east side of town. And a quick question is, can you do something about the stoplights on 250 East when you get off 64, whether you're going, you know, toward Richmond or away from it, and you go down into Charlottesville, you're running about five different stoplights there that go down to River Road. And that is a real mess.
And system there is the NSYNC system that is running right now, the proprietary system we talked about. And we have been trying to find ways to fund that. There's two issues there. Again, you're running at capacity, so it isn't functioning as efficiently as it should. The other, really a bigger issue, is we don't have our fiber down that line to connect into, so it's actually being, the communication is Wi-Fi, and that's somewhat unreliable. So we're trying to work through those issues, and there's other, you know, the county has some thoughts of projects in that area to help. Obviously, during the diverging diamond that's going to be constructed is a little bit further east there, that won't help that particular signal system, but we're aware of that issue, and we're looking for ways to try to solve it.
You know, Amy, I think that's something too that we can bring to Kathy McGee's attention, particularly when it comes to the Wi-Fi and cellular. I can hear you. Oh, I might not be able to hear
you. You are on.
It's on? Yeah.
Oh.
So now it's on.
We are obviously in a fairly rural area, and we're quite proud of the advances that we've made here through the courtesy of Jaunt. I have, and a friend of mine who's standing right up there, have discovered that in other communities, there's nothing really quite like Jaunt. And I just want to know how much they have to coordinate with you. I know that they're somewhat hampered by the fact that they use grants and they deal with local funds. And considering the demographics, especially of the group sitting here today, I think the role of Jaunt and other Jaunt in the area is very important.
Oh, I, you know, transit, van pools, transit, even transit Uber and Lyft services are being introduced. I mean, it's a priority everywhere. I was just with Jennifer DeBrule. She is our chief of public transportation. That is a priority to get those into all areas. Everywhere we go, we are focused on trying to build up the bus service, the van services that we have. So I know that, you know, we are trying to do it. We're actually even getting more into commuter services between certain cities, running them back and forth. We're even looking at longer distance transit services. How many in this room have heard of something called Virginia Breeze? Not many, but hello. We launched this service, Amy, remind me, about two years ago. I was still on the Commonwealth. I mean, I still am on the Commonwealth Transportation Board, but we launched the service. It was a bus that would run from Blacksburg to D.C. And at first they thought, nobody's going to take this bus. Well, since it's launched in 2 years, it's up 214%. We're doing another bus over there, and now we're launching the service in other cities, including Danville to D.C. So I will say that intercity and intra-city transit services are a priority in every community, regardless of the size.
These aren't necessarily cities.
Well, I mean, it is all part of those networks, but, I mean, they're all part of you know, we are working with many different communities to address this. And is it Melody Foster? Do you all know her? Anyway, she also is a an advocate for transit services in rural Virginia. And so she comes to the Commonwealth Transportation Boards, and so we really are making that a priority. If there's a certain area that you are perhaps concerned about, I would love to know what it is.
Secretary, you talked about the rail transportation and mentioned that you're going to meet with Amtrak.
You have a great
tomorrow.
Radio voice.
Oh, thank you. I often take the train up to Baltimore to visit one of my daughters.
And I go to Wilmington, Delaware.
There we go, to visit one of my daughters. And it's very convenient. And I understand there was funding for a second one, and you talked about the bridge problem, and you talked about the need for the full infrastructure and interchange. Is there something that we can do to help make that second Virginia Rail possible?
That Northeast Regional, yeah. A second train. What you can do... you know, we're having a public hearing up in Culpeper this afternoon, which is another great place to advocate for John and other transit services. We are very well aware, but for those of you who ever come to the public hearings, the more that you're able to advocate for that, it's always very helpful. Certainly, sustainability funding as we move forward because of having to launch those services. Really in those areas. But I will say that we are very, very well aware. The second train was actually attached to the 29 Solutions, which was my very first vote on the Commonwealth Transportation Board. So it's kind of personal for me that we get this train. Anyway, we are definitely working on it. If I ever think of something that you all can do, I'm calling Pepe and Linda Perriello, and I'm going to say, okay, we need help. So I'll do that. Thank you.
What are the prospects for a third lane on 81?
Oh, gosh, I didn't see who that was. you all know that 81 turned out to be a big surprise last year because in the regular session, 81, the legislation failed, but the money was stripped out. Then during the reconvened session, the time between that and the veto session, we worked very hard, and it was really with the governor, bipartisan legislators, House and Senate, the business community, citizens, and really the trucking industry, because the funding in that bill came from the truckers and their willingness to sit down with us. We really based the increase on vehicle miles traveled by trucks, and that's how we were. It's actually an interstate bill. Every interstate in Virginia is getting funding from this. But because such a huge percentage of trucks go down 81, they get the majority of those funds. But it raises about $280 million a year in Virginia and $150 million going over to 81. There's been, and that's a year, there's $2 billion worth of projects. I believe there are five widenings along the corridor. There are interchanges, truck climbing lanes, targeted widenings. We're just launching the first tranche of 31 projects, but it's targeted widening. It's not a third lane all the way through. The amount of funding is it will cover $2.2 billion worth of projects over the next 10 to 12 years. If we were widened the whole corridor with 325 miles to a third lane, it's cost prohibitive. But we're trying to be very targeted. We're also looking for ways to increase freight access, rail access for freight. There is $200 million in the proposal for multimodal, and part of that is the freight. We have an freight industrial access program. So we're working with various businesses to move them onto rail and off of 81 for trucks. We're working on passenger rail, transit solutions. We're trying to bring a more multimodal approach over to 81, but there are no plans to widen the whole corridor.
Thing about rail again. I was on the very first Northeast Regional train, and I take it too often to New York. What I am wondering.
You are fun.
Yeah, it is. But what I'm wondering is there any thoughts about transportation over to Staples Mills or something so we could also connect with the regular Amtrak over there? Whether it be bus or I don't know.
You're my bus person over here.
because the megabus, you can't go buy the ticket for the megabus mm-hmm. here. I don't know how you buy it online, I guess.
You know, that is a trickier problem. I, too, was on the very first Northeast Regional train. David Toscano, I think you all know, Delegate David Toscano went with me to beg Governor Kane and then Secretary Pierce Homer to invest some money in getting the train anchored in Lynchburg, Virginia. It is trickier going east and west. How many in this room remember Trans-Dominion Express? Okay. Well, remember, we were trying to get it Bristol, Lynchburg, Richmond. It is a little more challenging. I will tell you that as we're working on passenger rail, we may get closer. There's like this 19-mile stretch I can't quite solve. But, you know, we are working on it. That's not going to happen anytime soon.
Thank you.
But I would like the second train. So let's get the second train, and then we'll worry about going, yeah.
Well, seeing there are no more questions, I know I value, well, we have one more, so please.
I guess, is this on?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
I live in Branchland, and since this Hillsdale intersection with Greenbrier. Yeah. I think you people have been aware that this is a very dangerous intersection. Hillsdale is like a speed trap. It goes, people go back and forth without any thought. This is the only cross street since this was built that has no stop sign. We have trouble getting across to get up to 29. We have trouble making a left turn right here. And what has been done to address this? I know there have been numerous accidents there. I don't have any statistics, but has been anything been done to correct the situation?
The majority of Hillsdale is in the city of Charlottesville, and not to abrogate our responsibility, it's an issue. But right now, I'm getting there. Though we can pass on those concerns to the city and see what they, I'm sure they're looking at it. In terms of the Hillsdale Drive, the Greenbrier, you know, there was an initial study done with that project that it didn't warrant the signal at that location, but we did put the infrastructure in for if and when that signal would be warranted. The Charlottesville Residency is working with a stakeholder group to try to develop some traffic calming measures for primarily the Greenbrier-Hillsdale intersection, but if they come up with other ideas along the corridor, we'll pass those off to the city. So they're looking at, you know, some ways to, you know, narrow the intersection to slow people down, potentially a mini roundabout or some other solution. So there is work ongoing for that, trying to, and again, this will be brought back to the stakeholders. These are just some ideas that are being thrown around at this time. So we are working on it. The intersection of Hillsdale and Greenbrier is in Albemarle County, so that falls within our oversight. The rest of Hillsdale is in the city of Charlottesville. But we'll pass on that information to Joel DeNunzio in our Charlottesville Residency, because he's actively involved in that stakeholders group to make sure that it's a more comprehensive look. I'm sorry?
What is the name of the person you're passing it on to?
Well, he works for me, Joel DeNunzio. He's the resident engineer in the Charlottesville Residency. So he's here locally, and they're working with Albemarle County, as well as the city of the Charlottesville. There's a advisory council, as well as the Branchland property owners. I have the list of the stakeholders if you're interested in to see what information.
Who's convening it? Who's convening the work group?
Well, it really is. It's a combination of the county and our residency with Joel.
So a little bit of a follow-up question to that is, from a consultative perspective, how involved do you get with, for example, the city of Charlottesville has been increasing density and has plans to continue to increase density, which obviously impacts travel time, road conditions, and a whole lot of other things. Are you involved early in those conversations? Are you offering consultation to the city planning? And how does that interaction work? Or are you on the receiving end of requests after that's developed?
Well, I mean, in terms of the city, specifically for the city of Charlottesville, they're responsible for both their land use as well as their transportation planning and development. So within the city itself, we don't get directly involved, or it really depends. It's up to the city of how much involvement we have, but typically they're fairly independent. In terms of Albemarle County, since we maintain and operate all those roadways, we're directly involved in the planning as well as the implementation of new development. And our goal really is to try to make sure we maintain mobility on those, but the local land use decisions are the locality themselves. They, you know, for the larger rezonings and some other projects, they do a traffic impact analysis. We provide input and comments on that, try to control the access movements to make sure, like, for example, on 29, with the new developments north of Profit, the solution is always, well, we'll put in a signal at the new intersection. Well, that just degrades the whole corridor. So they are putting in some alternative intersections. So to come out of those locations, they'll turn right to go north and then U-turn to come back down south. And so those are about the limits of what we can do. I mean, in terms of once the development's approved, we work to try to make it the best that we can. But obviously, the more development you have, the more cars that are going to be on the roadways and the more congestion you're going to get. But
we offer multimodal solutions, right? There's always some other things. And so, making sure that there's public transportation as well as we densify so many of our centers.
In terms of multimodal solutions, back in 2002, the local MPO did a study of light rail, possibly to Stannardsville, Crozet, and Zion Crossroads. That idea seems to have died on the vine, but is there any thought at the top levels about regional transit, such as light rail, which is a lot cheaper than commuter rail?
You know, right now our priority really is the intercity passenger rail. We have received some applications for light rail. There was a project actually over in Norfolk connecting Norfolk and Virginia Beach. Norfolk has light rail, and then they were going to extend it, and then it failed in a referendum. I will say this, that even though it failed, that it was ranked the number one economic development transportation project in Virginia. So your question is very good. There is not a lot, because of the limited funding and the expense of light rail, there has not been a great deal of movement. I will say that bus rapid transit lanes, dedicated bus lanes, jaunt van pools have been very, that is really, I think, I don't want to say taking the place of, but that seems to be the more of a priority, that seeking those dedicated bus lanes is a reasonable approach. It's moving more people for the lowest possible cost. And I will tell you that over in Richmond, they launched the Pulse service. I don't know if you've heard this, but It launched last year. They were expecting 3,500 riders a day. From the very beginning, 7,000 riders a day. Ridership overall in the entire system is up 18%. So I just say that that seems to be the future of this now. Not to say it may not happen at some point, but with limited resources, that seems to be the route we're going, even in Northern Virginia. I personally would love it. And I think what's really interesting that young people, the entrepreneur community, which isn't always young, but they really love that kind of accessibility, and that's where they want to live, where people make these investments. So there is a return that we don't often see immediately.
I had a, is this, are we on now? Okay. A question for John, and it backs up to previous question the gentleman had about, or lady had over there, about how much influence you have with what the city does, which obviously has impact out in the county. And maybe this is not correct, but I had heard at one point that when the city was doing the Best Buy ramp, doubling the ramp there from southbound 29 up onto the bypass, that originally they wanted to run an additional light across where the ramp comes down from the bypass and comes down to 29, so it would have been right across from a driveway into Best Buy. And that VDOT told them, even though that's all in the city, no, that's putting too many lights too close together. Was that really true, that was some VDOT input that stopped that from happening?
That particular project, I've been down in Culpeper District about 6 years, mm-hmm. about 6.5 years. At that particular time, that project was being managed by the city. And we eventually took it over to get it moving and make sure that it was built in time for the Rio Road and those other projects. So that may have been true. Again, the key component with that is there's federal funds on those projects, and we're acting really as Federal Highways Oversight. So the same time, sometimes Federal Highway tells us we can't do things with their money, we can tell the city the same thing. So that's the kind of control that we would have over those to try to, make sure we're making smart decisions with those.
Did you want the light?
No.
Okay.
Curious how, if that was just rumor control or really was true that VDOT had an input to that project, mm-hmm. which is completely within the city. And I understand now, John's explained, it's the funding stream down in many cases gives you a chance to put your fingers in the pie. Thank goodness you did. It would have been another disaster. The city has a history, I'm sorry, personal opinion, of under-engineering traffic-wise everything they do and publicly making statements about, well, there'll be fewer cars in the future. There'll be fewer people driving in the future. And then they go through and, increase the density in the pop. And I, even given the tendency for people to move into the city, all right, and needing longer-range transportation, there's still going to be more people and more cars on the road. Had one other question for the secretary here. I have not read all of the new stuff finally. I just heard the other day that an agreement had been reached on the Cabin John Bridge problem up there, and it's going to be to widen that as opposed to putting in a second bridge. And I understand that your main problem is Maryland owns the river to the high water mark on the Virginia side, all right? So, but there has to be agreement on both sides of the of the river. But it sounded like an agreement long overdue, but starting to fund what will be a disaster up there. Do you have any comments on that?
It's a project that's been probably 4 decades in the making. It's a bridge. It's 4 lanes in each direction. It is the worst. Everybody has the worst. I know Occoquan's bad. It is one of the most notorious choke points in the United States, and it does. It's called Cabin John American Legion Bridge, and it's very interesting that you say that because the agreement was just signed yesterday. So I was actually up in D.C. for this, navigating and negotiating it. There's been no decision on whether or not it's going to be one bridge or 2 bridges. It's going to be within this general right-of-way to construct the bridge. Maryland owns 79% of the bridge. Virginia owns 21% of the bridge. And I think that that has really kept anything from happening. So what we're doing is we have a project in Northern Virginia called Project Next. And we have an express lane network along 495. This is the last 2.5 miles up into American Legion Bridge. It was announced in January 30th this year. I called Secretary Ron in Maryland when we announced Project Next and said, okay, we've got to do American Legion Bridge. So with that conversation, Governor Northam ended up making a call to Governor Hogan a few months later. But the idea that we've been working on is if we could take our Project Next, take our express lanes, we would cross the Potomac, the bridge, go up to a safe point to where our express lanes would end and Maryland's express lanes would pick up, to try to keep the beltway a seamless transition. And so we would be tolling north, building, it's about a 3-mile stretch. We'll build the express lanes going north. Maryland would build the express lanes going south, and then we would split the bridge 79-21. And so based on that concept, we did come to an agreement yesterday. The design for it has not been finalized. We've seen and worked through concept where it's a single bridge, where we widen it within within the access that we have. It's going to be 4 general purpose lanes in each direction with 2 express lanes in each direction. So it'll be a 12-lane bridge. It could be 1 or 2 or however the access points work. So engineers have been working on this for a very long time. We're very adept, not me personally, but I will tell you that the engineers within VDOT, we're doing the Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel right now, $3.8 billion, largest design build in Virginia's history, one of the largest in the United States. It is going to be really fascinating to see how this develops, but I personally have never been involved with a project that got announced yesterday where I have received so many notes from citizens saying thank you. That they really, it has been impossible to get done. So we're working on the American Legion Bridge and how that whole network will work. And the people who live there, anyway, the people who've come to see me, it's just really wonderful that we've come to some agreement and we're worked through the strategies to get it done. We're also working on the Nice Bridge with Maryland. We're working on Long Bridge with D.C., and that's where the rail, that's our rail bridge, Long Bridge, and some other things. But we're really working very diligently to collaborate, to partner with Maryland and D.C. to create, again, just a more seamless network.
Final question. Yes, we're very intent on building new things. How are we coming with maintenance?
Well, you know, in Virginia, I will say, you know, the priorities, we have to do maintenance first, which is why the new capacity money I described in Smart Scale is down 45%. So we are actually going through a process right now. Commissioner Steve Britch, head of VDOT, is put together. He's looked at our whole business model for pavement and structure maintenance. He's put together, rather than looking at things in 30-year increments, we're going to be looking at it in 50-year increments. Rather than looking at replacement, we're going to be looking much more at state of good repair, maintaining our system. So I think if we can get the funding package through, which I'm really hoping y'all are going to advocate for, through the General Assembly, we will be able to fund not only the pavements and maintenance part of transportation, special structures. So it would be, we do have our state of good repair fund. So we do have money for bridges, but I'm talking about there's 25 structures in Virginia, and we call it special structures, where within about 15 to 20 years, they're all going to reach their end of life. and there is no funding for them. Like, there is no identified funding. And so we're trying to do the state of good repair on our major infrastructure, the maintenance piece, and now our special structures. We're trying to put that whole maintenance package together and actually try to fund it over, identify funding for how it could work over the next 50 years. Again, we have to get this through the General Assembly.
So I thank you all for attending and posing such interesting questions. A special thank you to Secretary Valentine and District Engineer Lynch for sharing your opinions, your expertise, and your vision. I hope to see you the second Wednesday in December, December 11th, when the next meeting will be Lieutenant Governor John Hager, who will be talking in reference to his new book, Best Seat in the House. Drive safely.